Hi there, guys and dolls. This is Bo Diddley, and I'm right here with your friend, Robert Barkley. And I want you to know that you are listening to the Rhythm and the Blues at the Juke Joint. Okay, like I said again, I'm right here with your friend and my friend, Robert Barkley, on CMU Public Radio. Now catch it. Don't touch that dial, because if you do, you're going to miss some good stuff, baby.
Vocals and piano, that's Marcia Ball from her new CD titled Shine Bright.
Working with
Well, good evening. It's 6.5 minutes past 8 o'clock. It's Sunday night, and that means it's time for 3 hours of the blues from the Juke Joint. My name is Robert Barclay. Well, tonight is my 33rd anniversary broadcast of this show. I first went on the air the first Sunday night in April of 1985, and I'm still here, thanks to you, because you support WCMU and the programming here on Sunday nights from 8 to 11 for the Juke Joint broadcast. I'm really excited about tonight's show. I have put twice as much work in tonight's broadcast than I normally do. I normally do 6, 8, 10 hours of prep time. This was spread out over several days. Tonight, I chose some favorite sound bites from interviews I've taped with blues musicians during the past 33 years. And we'll hear Coco Montoya reflecting on one of his mentors, Albert Collins. And of course, we'll hear Coco and Albert. Bruce Iglauer, the owner of Alligator Records, talking about Sun Seals and Hound Dog Taylor. Some great stories from a master storyteller. We'll hear from John Hammond about the time Eric Clapton and Jimi Hendrix sat in on John's gig. We'll also hear about the time Elvis Presley first walked into Bernard Lansky's menswear shop on Beale Street in Memphis. It's a great story. And we'll hear about a special guest who dropped in on Bernard Allison's first blues gig at the age of 16. And more. Get some other things to spin for you tonight as well, including the new Paul Thorne release. Let's get back to the music. Let's return to Marcia Ball. She wrote that first tune, the title track, Shine Bright. The second tune was written by a legend in New Orleans, Ernie Cato. And here she is singing, I Got to Find Somebody.
Well, I got to find somebody who would treat me right. What'd you say?
Love me right.
You sound so sweet.
Kiss me right.
I got to find somebody who would love me right. So I can stay home at night. Well,
it's
the first time for everything. Whoa, and everybody's lying. But all I want is for some good man to come in and treat me right. Well, I got to find somebody who would treat me right. What'd you say, Jim? Say it one more time.
Kiss me right.
I've got to find somebody who will love me right. So I can stay home at night. Now one more thing,
tell you about it.
You rub your head so much till honey, it's a crying shame. But if you only shut up, listen to me. I'm just trying to be your gal.
Let me tell you about it.
I've got to find somebody who will treat me.
got to find somebody to treat me right. Marsha Ball. Now we're going to turn to a new CD I'm going to debut for you. This is by Paul Thorne, an excellent singer, songwriter, a rock and roller, a blues artist, a gospel artist, and he appeared at the Wheatland Festival several years ago, and someday I hope I hope the festival committee brings him back. Paul Thorne, he'll be appearing in Ann Arbor in early June. His new CD is called Don't Let the Devil Ride. It's on his label, which he calls Perpetual Obscurity. He's got a sense of humor, as you can tell. Here he is on a tune titled Come On, Let's Go.
Ready?
Yeah.
Well, come on, let's go.
So I can die. crossed over. Well, well, well. Well, well, well. I done crossed over. Jesus gonna make up my dying bed. Dying bed, Jesus gonna make up my dying bed.
From Tupelo, Mississippi, Paul Thorne from his new CD, Don't Let the Devil Ride. And he was on guitar and vocals. He certainly knows how to play slide. That was a song that Blind Willie Johnson recorded back in the late 1920s, and numerous artists over the decades have recorded it ever since. That was a song titled, Jesus Gonna Make Up My Dying Bed. And we open things up with Come On, Let's Go. Well, tonight I'm going to spin some of my favorite sound bites and then the music by the artist that I've grown to love over the last 33 plus years. And I've had the opportunity, because I attend the Chicago Blues Fest every year since 1986. I missed one since 86. I stuck around to watch my son graduate from high school in 1996, the same weekend as the Chicago Blues Fest. That's the only one I've met since 1986. And I have become friendly with Bruce Iglauer, the owner of the Alligator Records label, probably the most prominent blues label in the world, and it's based in Chicago. He is a wonderful storyteller, and right now we're going to sit down and listen to an interview, a soundbite from an interview that I taped at the Blues Fest in 2004 about the artist who inspired the launch of his record label back in 1971. Well, everybody that's been following the blues in the last 30 years knows that Hound Dog Taylor was the first artist that you worked with before there was even an Alligator label. Ultimately, that was the first Alligator release. What was it about Hound Dog Taylor that caused his music to start your label?
I guess it was because Hound Dog Taylor and the House Rockers created the happiest blues I ever heard. The music was so infectious and so rhythmic and so energized that you couldn't help but love it. Hound Dog had this gigantic, larger-than-life personality, and projected it both in his music and everything he did in his show. So seeing Hound Dog and hearing his records were very much the same thing. He was able to infuse that personality into his music like really great blues artists do. I mean, when you listen to Muddy or Wolf, you know something about the man as well as knowing something about the song. I first saw Hound Dog sitting in, actually, in the summer of 1969 at a club on the West Side that Eddie Shaw ran. And it was a Blue Monday jam session, and Hound Dog wasn't there with his band, and he was introduced and sat down to play, and it was a disaster. Hound Dog, I should tell you, visually, Hound Dog was this long, tall guy, probably 6'2", 6'3", probably 120 pounds, soaking wet. He was wearing an old shiny suit, which was his best suit, and he was really hard to understand sometimes when he was talking. And he carried a very cheap Japanese guitar, $50 Maxwell Street Market kind of guitar. For those of you who know about guitars, it was a Kingston, which was made by the famous cheap Japanese company Taisco Del Rey, but it was actually their bottom-of-the-line cheap guitar. So it was the cheap version of the cheap guitar. So Hound Dog played sitting down. He had bad feet, but he sat down in a chair to play, and he started a song, and the band tried to follow him, and within 30 seconds the song just fell apart, and he stopped, and then he'd tell some joke that you couldn't understand, and he'd start laughing in the middle of the joke, and then he'd light a pell-mell and take a drag on and put the pell-mell down, the cigarette down on the mic stand, start another song, and then it was a disaster. So I saw this three or four times, and I thought, okay, this is some likable, funny guy that people let sit in because he's too nice to say no to, but nobody takes him seriously as a musician. Well, in 1970, I moved to Chicago to work at Del Mar Records and Jazz Record Mart, and I would hang out at Teresa's Lounge down in the basement at 48th and Indiana on the south side, and I kept running into Hound Dog. And he would say, well, come over and see me play. And I thought, oh, yeah, right. I'm going to come over and see this walking disaster area play. But he told me he had a gig every Sunday afternoon at a club called Florence's Lounge. Now, Sunday afternoon is a time when there weren't other gigs. Gigs were mostly in the evening, as you'd expect. So I was feeling like I had some Swedish blues fans staying with me. I was feeling like finding something to do on Sunday afternoon. So I thought, what the heck? We'll go down to this club, Florence's, at 54th Place in Shields, a little side street bar, and see what this is about. So this was a bar that only had music on Sunday afternoon, just literally a neighborhood bar on a two-block-long street next to a set of railroad tracks. And I walk in with my friends, and there's Hound Dog with his own band, Brewer Phillips on guitar, bass guitar, but guitar bass, not bass bass, and Ted Harvey on drums, and they're just rocking the joint down, and people are dancing in the aisles. There's no bandstand. They just moved a couple tables, and the band sat in the back of the club. He's singing through a mic plugged into a guitar amp, and everybody's loaded, and people are just going nuts, and the music is so rhythmically infectious and so up-tempo, you just can't help but love it. And Hound Dog's putting on a show. He's in his folding chair, but he's stomping his feet, one left, right, he throws his head back, and he's playing with slide. I'm a huge slide fan. He's got a big steel tube on his little finger. I notice he has six fingers. And Brewer Phillips, who is a fabulous guitar player, is playing ever-changing bass parts on a Fender six-string guitar. And Ted Harvey is just shuffling like mad. And I couldn't help but grin. And they played for 3 hours straight. Every once in a while, somebody would go to the bathroom and somebody else from the audience would sit in because the place was full of musicians. And very few slow numbers. Hound Dog had this very high voice, and he mostly sang on the slow ones, and he'd be like making up words on the fast ones. And it was just a joy, and it was so rough edge. And there's nothing. I entered a band in Chicago that was that raw. The guitars were cranked up all the way, so it was a wall of guitar distortion. And I was thinking, boy, Eric Clapton would kill to get this guitar sound. And I just fell in love with the band. And I was there almost every Sunday after that, for a year.
Well, what does Hound Dog Taylor sound like? Well, I want to play a couple of tunes from the very first release. This came out on LP back in 1971. And this tune was suggested by Jan, a longtime listener to the Juke Giant broadcast who used to live in Rose City. Give me back my wig.
Too. When you
Ragged But Right, or Ragged and So Right. Hound Dog Taylor and the House Rockers, their debut album on Alligator Records, the debut album for Alligator Records back in 1971. They must have 400 releases in their catalog since 1971. And we just heard a couple of tracks. We opened up with Gimme Back My Wig, and we concluded with his version of an old Elmore James tune, Wild About You Baby. We'll hear more from Hound Dog and another story from Bruce Iglauer about Hound Dog Taylor a little later in the broadcast. It is now 35 minutes past 8 o'clock. My name is Robert Barclay, and I heard from station manager, the retired station manager for WCMU Public Radio, John Scheffler, now retired up in the UP, and he's got the Juke Joint broadcast tuned in right now. And in fact, he is the one I had to go to back in 1984. I said, John, we really need a blues show on this station. And he goes, yeah, I'll remind me of it every now and then. Well, so I would remind him and nag him a bit. And he'd say, okay, record a 60-minute promo, or a 60-minute demo. So I did that, and he liked it. And he was the program director, actually, back at that point in time. Tom Hunt was the station manager, and John said, okay, you got Sunday night at 8 o'clock. Sunday night? Nobody listens to the radio on Sunday night. And Tom Hunt said, you got to make them want to listen to the radio. So that's been my responsibility for Sunday night from 8 to 11 for the last 33 years. Let's turn to a soundbite that I taped with John Hammond, who has been recording since 1962, the year that Dylan launched his career in the same city, New York City. And they are roughly the same age. And he grew up in Greenwich Village, so he was exposed to all kinds of great music. He was raised by his mother, not his father, John Hammond Sr. He was raised by his mother, though, of course, he was well aware of what his father did. So let's turn to a soundbite from my interview with John Hammond, taped at the 2001 Wheatland Festival.
You did something significant for a young Jimi Hendrix. Now you got to tell me that story.
Well, I was playing in New York at one of my standby clubs, which was the Gaslight, and my friend Ben Athelbaum came over between shows and said, gee, there's this guy across the street at the Cafe Wah playing all these tunes off your So Many Roads album. So I said, really? He says, you gotta see him, he's unbelievable. So I went over and there was this guy playing upside down, left-handed Fender Stratocaster with some guys just jamming with him, and he was phenomenal. And I was introduced to him, and he said, yeah, man, I got your record, blah, 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 you know. And he was stranded in New York, turns out. He lost his guitar, was borrowing a guitar. Anyway, he asked me if I could get him a gig. So I put this little band together, and we played at the Cafe O'Gogo for a week, and we were held over for a week. And everybody and their brother came to see the show, and he was discovered by Chaz Chandler playing with me, offered money to go over to record in England. I saw him about a year later, big star, you know, and he came and sat in with me for a week with my band that I just put together. So what a guy.
You've had some pretty impressive people open for you over the years. I've heard that the Allman Brothers and, of course, Hendrix and Eric Clapton have all opened for you. Tell me a little bit about those stories.
Well, Eric Clapton never opened for me, but I was on tour in England in 1965 and got on some gigs with John Mayall and the Blues Breakers, of which Eric was a part of. And I got to know Eric real well, and what a fantastic guitar player, great guy, totally into Freddie King, man. That was his idol. And so that same week that Jimi Hendrix came back to the U.S., this is 1967, Eric happened to come into town with Cream and was off for a week, and So Eric Clapton and Jimi Hendrix were my backup band. Nobody believes this, but every person that was in that club I've seen over the last 40 years that have come in and say, I saw you with Eric Clapton and Jimi Hendrix. Well, anyway, yes, that's how it went down. Allman Brothers, I met Dwayne in 1969 before there was an Allman Brothers band, when he was a studio cat for Atlantic, and he recorded with me on my album Southern Fried, and then sure enough he put his band together and they opened for me in Minneapolis in 1970. Mm-hmm. 35 below zero, I remember. Oh, I mean, I've gotten to meet so many great players over the years.
Well, let's turn to John Hammond's Southern Fried album, and with Dwayne Allman on lead guitar on both of these tracks. This was recorded down in Muscle Shoals in the mid-1960s, and we're going to open up with Crying for My Baby.
Oh, sometimes I feel a little lonely. All I think about are what my baby said to me. You got me walking, talking low. My friends tell me, baby, you don't love me anymore. Baby, don't you hear me cry for you? I wish you'd come on home, honey. I can't live my life without you. In my track, my clothes are falling off of my back. Baby, don't you ever cry for you. I wish you'd come on home. Live my life without you. Still, you don't mean a little thing.
that you love me. You cross your heart to die, but I found out, baby, bye-bye, I'm leaving. Yes, I'm leaving. Yes, if you can't treat me right, ain't no use to me hanging around. You love me, you cross your heart to die. I found out, baby, bye bye, I'm leaving. Well, but I'm gonna have to put you down. If you can't treat me right, ain't no use to me hanging around. Well, it's early in the morning before I rise. And they'll roll in your bloodshot eyes. You're meanest, meanest woman I've ever seen. No matter how I try to treat you right, still you're the meanest little thing.
And that was John Hammond with Duane Allman on lead guitar on a tune that Howlin' Wolf wrote and used to record, I'm Leaving You. And we opened up with a Harold Barrage tune with John Hammond, again with Duane Allman on lead guitar, Crying for My Baby. In a minute, we're going to hear from Jimi Hendrix. Well, John Hammond said Jimi Hendrix was playing some of Hammond's latest releases back in 1966. At a gig across the street in Greenwich Village. Then he went to England to launch his career, and then he came back across the United States. And when he did, he sat in with Eric Clapton, and they performed as part of John Hammond's band. What a great thrill that must have been. Anyway, let's turn to a couple of Hendrix tunes from his debut release.
Stand next to your fire. We'll be right back.
Jimi Hendrix from his first release back in 1967, his first LP. And we opened up with Fire, and we concluded with I Don't Live Today. Jimi Hendrix and the Jimi Hendrix Experience. Noel Redding on bass and Mitch Mitchell on the drums, with Jimmy, of course, on lead guitar and vocals. Taking us to the top of the hour, here comes Little Walter up the line.
You used to love me. You said I was your desire. You're acting strange lately, trying to drive my love away. I'm cutting out.
Going back up the line, Little Walter Jacobs for Checker Records out of Chicago. When I come back after the station ID and some other messages, I'm going to turn to another interview in which I talk to Bernard Lansky, the owner of a menswear store in Memphis, Tennessee. And, of course, he'll talk about his most famous customer. So you be sure to stay near the radio.